Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Boy, this feels like old times.
There's no meaning to life anymore, Ray. No meaning at all.
Josh, you gotta speak into your microphone.
There's no meaning to life anymore, Ray.
You gotta have more energy, Josh.
Dude, I am depressed right now.
You're depressed when we're going on to the show?
Yes.
So you came totally unprepared for this show this week.
Oh, I came prepared, just totally unenthusiastically prepared.
Josh, you're bringing everybody down. I can see people turning off this podcast right now.
There is no meaning to the Ravens season anymore, Ray. It's over.
You're 5-4.
Finito. Last place in AFC North. I'm in panic mode right
by
now.
By a game.
I am getting near the Bay Bridge as we speak.
Uh-oh, Josh. Should we put out an Amber Alert for you?
No, you don't have to put out any alert for me, okay? I know when a product is bad, it's bad. When it's good, it's good. Right now, it is rotten right now, Ray. I'm feeling rotten right now. The whole system is flawed. John Harbaugh sucks. Joe Flacco sucks. The Ravens offensive line sucks. Ray Rice sucks. The system is broken, Ray. It is broken.
That sounds very familiar, Josh.
The sky is falling. John Harbaugh sucks. Joe Flacco sucks. Ray Rice sucks. The system is broken. What do you mean it sounds familiar?
Did you not hear the soundbite I just played?
I just heard that. Yes. Why? What did I say that was? What did I say that was totally inaccurate in that whole thing?
Well, right now the system is broken.
The system is broken right now.
A couple of weeks ago, the Ravens were 5-2,
and now they're 5-4.
And many were claiming that this was the most balanced Baltimore Ravens team we've ever seen, and considering that their defense and their offense was lighting the world on fire. And two games now, and you're ready to drive off a bridge. What gives?
It's just things were going so good a couple weeks ago. I'm not used to this. This is the first time they lost back-to-back games since week 16 and week 17 of the 2013 season, when they were 8-6. Everyone was feeling good from that Monday Night Football win over the Detroit Lions, and everything just fell apart. And these last 2 weeks feel reminiscent of that exact time frame right there.
Well, the difference, though, is, Josh, is that it's not at the end of the season, and we're still right smack dab in the middle of the football season right here. The Ravens haven't even had a bye week yet.
I know.
They're going to play Tennessee, and then all of a sudden they have the bye, and then they're going to go against New Orleans, okay? Yeah, those are, Tennessee, you could say, could be a pushover, but there's no such thing as pushover games in the NFL. The narrative can turn on a dime. I mean, you see Phillip Rivers here, could be one of the best quarterbacks in the league, all of a sudden give you -3 fantasy points.
Yeah.
But Josh, come on. It's not all doom and gloom here, okay?
But
there was one good thing that happened. There were a couple good things that happened this week for Baltimore sports. Okay, number one, Jacoby Jones had a 108-yard kickoff return.
No, he didn't. He fumbled in the end zone. I saw it. I'm in denial about that play.
You are in denial that that actually happened.
Yes, I am in complete denial, just like Al Michaels was. Al Michaels wasn't even enthused from that play.
Oh, he was not even there with Chris Collinsworth.
Yeah, I think we can all universally agree that Chris Collinsworth is just completely horrible. But
well, you right now sound horrible because you need some energy. Okay, how about this? How about this, Josh? I'll cheer you up this way.
Please.
Okay, on Tuesday of this week for Baltimore sports, the Orioles had not one, not two, but three Gold Glove winners. How about that? Ain't the beer cold?
That puts a little grin on my face there. I'm actually relieved to hear that news.
So then perk up.
I'm trying to perk up. It's really tough, Ray. I am really trying. By the way, yes, I still blame Ray Rice for everything.
You blame Ray Rice for everything, even though
I'll blame him for the Steelers loss.
Well, I mean, Lorenzo Taliaferro had a fumble that happened in the second quarter, disastrous second quarter for the Baltimore Ravens in that game. It was a complete blowout all around, but you can't blame Ray Rice for that loss. You can't blame the officials for that loss like some Raven fans are doing right now.
Can I blame Chris Collinsworth?
Maybe.
Maybe. Just blame him a little bit.
I don't know how Chris Collinsworth can influence a Ravens loss, considering that Ravens players on the field can't hear the commentators in the booth.
Yeah, that is that's very true indeed.
I mean, you don't see Joe Flacco on the sidelines going to somebody in his helmet. He has the radio signal on his helmet, and he can change the radio dial from Tarball to Chris Collinsworth, see what Collinsworth is saying about him,
and then just
and have that and have that influence his state of play. I mean, come on, Chris Collinsworth affecting the game. You're sounding ridiculous. You really are depressed tonight.
Yeah,
and I'm a little perturbed by that, Josh. We have a show here to run. We have a professional environment I like to keep here on the Baltimore Sports Free For All on sfmsports.net, which our Facebook page is
the Baltimore Sports Free For All podcast,
which you can find us on Twitter at
bsportsfree the number four all
at bsportsfree
at bsportsfree the number
four. You got to have that at symbol with at, the hashtag and everything else like that. Now, Twitter's weird. What came up with all these at symbols and the hashtags and the what else do they have?
I don't know. Well, you have the trending, of course, the trending, the hashtags, and the at next to the screen name. But tell you this, though, whoever came up with that, though, as simple as it sound as it sounded at the time, made a lot of money off of that idea. Wish I could have went back in time 10 years from now.
Making the money off the idea, making the money off your blog, tease that, please.
right. Monday Sports Mornings with Josh, and of course our Monday Sports Morning blog, which you can find on Blogger, is going to be delayed for the next couple of weeks because, of course, on this week's edition, we announced the American League Gold Glove winners. The following week, we will announce the American League Manager of the Year. Hopefully, it's Buck Showalter. Hopefully, we can talk about that on the next episode.
Being voted by the Baseball Writers Association
of
America.
Not the managers.
But the Baseball Writers Association of America. I don't have my fingers crossed for that one, unfortunately.
You know, strange things have happened. Of course, we'll kind of get back to our previous ways where we would do the shows on Sundays, and then the fourth on the next episode after that, it will be on a Tuesday, of course, after the Ravens face the Saints on Monday Night Football, and then we get back to Sundays like it normally was.
Yeah, we go back to recording on Sundays and uploading pretty much on Monday, which that's the reason why this week we decided to record on a different day and upload the next day, because Ravens played a primetime game on Sunday night, and the Gold Glove announcements came out on Tuesday night, so we had to push our show back a couple days this week.
Yeah, and normally, being the night owls that me and Ray are, well, I don't know so much about Ray, but definitely I'm a night owl.
I fell asleep in my car today, Josh.
Yeah, you're... Would that classify you as a night owl?
Not really, considering... Well, what considered me a night owl was when I started out in radio. I was an overnight guy. You could say that I was a night owl then. I was running... I think it was... what was the one guy that was on overnights at ESPN Radio? Jason Smith All Night?
Yep, Jason Smith All Night.
Yeah, I was running the Baltimore feed of that on the old ESPN Radio affiliate here in Baltimore that no longer exists. And I was doing that for a little bit before I got promoted to doing the Orioles Radio Network and then doing everything else that I did in radio. But, I was a night owl then. I couldn't wait to get off that shift. I only was on the overnights for 6 months. I kind of meteorically arose in that organization, was able to get off that overnight shift. Would I work it again? Maybe. It all depends on how desperate I am. It also depends on if I want to get back into the business, how I would need to get that foot in the door into that company. I mean, foot in the door. I feel like I have to get like 50 million feet in the door before you ultimately get somewhere in radio.
Or maybe you could get offered your own shift to host a show. I mean, you're kind of reaching that peak in your life.
Wait. Hang on a second. I could host a show overnight.
There you go.
Maybe you do an overnight, but how awake would I be in order to work my day job?
And you would need a lot of coffee.
Overnight. Yes, I would need a lot. Coffee doesn't do anything for me, Josh.
Nah, it doesn't do anything.
I don't usually do the coffee thing. I maybe do the 5-hour energy shots, if that, but then I start like having my foot tap and maybe my heart starts racing. I get that adrenaline rush once in a while and get all paranoid, like, ding! Like, where am I going? And I have no idea what to do. So I kind of quit the 5-hour energy binge.
Yeah, seeing how this episode was being recorded on Election Day 2014, have any interesting Election Day stories to share, at least for as it took place?
No, I was in between jobs. I was in between job sites, so I decided to go to my polling place in between job sites to kill some time, and I was in there a grand total of 5 minutes.
So you did do your civic duty, and you did vote.
Yes.
Which we hope all the listeners of the Baltimore Sports Free For All did the same.
Yeah, and unlike you, I had my voter's card. I carry it in my wallet.
See, you're getting on me about that. What is... See, here's the thing. I think it is mandatory to have your driver's license, to have your credit card and debit card, social security if necessary. But
well, maybe it won't be a mandatory to have your credit card and debit card anymore since you can pay with your phone now.
Yeah, that is very true. But I guess the one thing I take away from Election Day is just seeing the families at the libraries holding up the sign saying, hey, vote for our uncle or vote for our dad, vote for our mom. It's nice to see that whether you win or lose the election, I guess you're all winners because your face is getting out there.
And vote for Pedro.
Vote for Pedro, indeed. Well, going from that segment to...
Have we teased the show yet, what we're talking about today?
I think it's pretty much...
I mean, we're 10 minutes in right now. You've been depressed. I've had to talk you off the ledge here, and you have been totally depressed this entire episode, and I had to bring you up. You've been bringing everybody down, so I brought you back, but I've yet to tease the show here. Yes, we're talking about the Ravens-Steelers game, then we're going to move on to Ravens versus Titans. We're going to be talking about the Baltimore Orioles, 3 Gold Glove winners. We're going to be talking about our memories in college football this past Saturday, and hint, we will be talking about the Maryland Terrapins, that little skirmish they had with Penn State, and then, of course, our two-minute rants.
Mine is going to be NBA related. Yep, the first big NBA topic of 2014, or the 2014-15 season, I should say.
Mine is going to be about these news stories all of a sudden popping out about teams that are struggling and how certain players in the locker room don't like their quarterbacks.
Well, easy there, Joe Namath. You had to emphasize struggling.
Struggling.
Well, those teams are struggling, and with the struggle comes the media scrutiny, and see if anything is if there's a little bit of trouble in paradise.
Yeah.
Hey, what are we doing? I'm giving away my 2-minute rant here. Stop it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right.
So we'll talk about Ravens versus Steelers here. I mean, do we have to though?
I guess we have to. We have no choice.
It was quite the blowout there, Josh.
Yeah. It definitely is not what it was expected. I mean, in regards to the Ravens Steelers rivalry, which just seemed to be close games played, you know, scores in the 20s or maybe in the high teens. I mean, in week two, the Ravens won 26-6, and it didn't seem like a regular Ravens Steelers game. And we were thinking, okay, week nine is approaching. The Ravens are going on the road on Sunday Night Football, I should say, to Pittsburgh, to Heinz Field. And the Steelers had a Mean Joe Green night where they retired his number. By the way, how did it take that long to retire that guy's number? That guy was like an icon.
Yeah, and he was an icon for Coca-Cola as well, because everybody remembers the Mean Joe Green commercial and him giving the Coke to the kid after he had a really bad game.
I mean, you look at that team and that franchise and all the players they developed over the years, the Hall of Famers that they've, you know, pretty much spit out of their football factory there. Terry Bradshaw, Mean Joe Green, Franco Harris, and it just seemed like these guys wait until they're in their 60s to have their number retired, and I just never understood it.
Yeah, I mean, for all you care, he could be dead by now. Yeah,
exactly. It's kind of like the Macho Man Randy Savage WWE feud that supposedly happened that kept him out of the Hall of Fame. May he rest in peace.
Well, you're asking the same guy who thinks that it's a travesty that Charles Haley isn't in the Hall of Fame just yet.
Yeah, or how it took Art Monk almost 12 years to get into the Hall of Fame.
I mean, when you Google Charles Haley, the first image that comes up of him
Super Bowl rings.
Yeah, he's got the Super Bowl rings on every single finger.
Yeah, well, two teams that have won at least two Super Bowls since the start of the 21st century, the Ravens and the Steelers. The Ravens go on the road. They're looking to avenge the Week 8 loss, the close Week 8 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals.
That they did not lose because of officiating. It was one of the reasons why they lost, but it wasn't the main reason that they lost, never mind the turnovers and everything like that. And the fact that, what happened to the Baltimore Ravens' discipline here?
Yeah, well, not just the discipline. What happened to their defense?
What happened to their offensive line ever since Eugene Monroe came back?
Yeah, you know, we got to talk about that, too, because when Eugene Monroe had to sit on the sidelines for a knee procedure, I guess you could say, James Hurst was sort of the fill-in at left tackle. And while Hurst had a terrible game against the Colts, he did have a couple of good games starting in, you know, admirably for Eugene Monroe. But it just seems like ever since Monroe took back his left tackle starting position, the Ravens' offensive line has been performing subpar, if I dare to say so.
Yeah, very subpar, and it seemed like James Harrison had his way with Eugene Monroe and the rest of the offensive line. James Harrison looked like he was 26 again.
James Harrison, well, I got to talk about this too, because I was guilty of it on social media. There was a drive where both James Harrison and Troy Polamalu limped off of the field. And I was thinking to myself, has age finally caught up to the Steelers' defense? And then what happens a couple of plays later, Harrison and Polamalu both get back in the game, and I'm like, yeah, they must have read my post. They must have read my post, and now they're playing like it's 2005 all over again. But I'll say this, though. James Harrison probably played his best game in probably the past three seasons. And you can call it familiarity. You can call it knowing your opponent better than anybody else. But it just seemed like the Steelers' defense had way too many answers for the Ravens' offensive line. And while Joe Flacco, while there are some people that will be quick to bash Joe Flacco after a loss, I will say this. Did he throw an interception? Absolutely, he threw an interception.
But after I might add, and this is the Raven fans who say, oh, it's the referee's fault. They're always against us. We have a chip on our shoulder because none of the rest of the league likes us. Okay, Joe Flacco had a penalty going towards him that he was driven into the ground when it seemed like it was just a normal tackle that was just a little bit after he threw the ball. But they said, oh, yeah, he drove him into the ground, personal foul, automatic first down. And the Ravens failed to capitalize on that. They had a call go the Ravens' way. A BS call go the Ravens' way. And the Ravens did not capitalize on it. It was the Steelers who stopped them and got an interception. That's how you handle a BS call, Ravens fans, on the Steelers' side. You don't let it affect you. You go out there, you play the next play, and you do what you need to do to force the turnover.
And while it is a rivalry and one of the best rivalries in recent NFL history, it just seemed like the Ravens' defense, more so than offense, had, I guess you could say, too much fire in the stove. Because while I do admire aggression, I do admire the feud, sometimes I feel like the schoolyard crap that some players do as far as gang tackling a running back with seven guys, or maybe running into the back of a running back's knee or thigh, whatever you want to call it, debatable with Terrell Suggs.
Same running back who punched a player in the face.
Yeah, like
after
Eric Blunt.
Game.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to bring that up too.
I mean, you don't have to bring it up too much because it happened 5 years ago. And
of time has passed since then. Yeah.
Other than punching a fellow Tampa Bay Buccaneer in the face during a practice as well, and maybe the questionable dealings he had with Le'Veon Bell with the marijuana at the beginning of the season, LeGarrette Blount has kind of kept his nose clean since that big punch out. He was suspended initially, Josh, for the entire season in 2009.
Yeah.
Oh, this was 2009. You know what I was doing in 2009, Josh?
Working in radio?
I still do, but I barely was old enough to drink in 2009.
Yeah, that.
Now in 2014, I'm a full-fledged adult here at the tender age of 27 years old, and I'm a much different person at 27 than I am at 22. You just can't fault a guy for something like that. Yeah, what he did was absolutely regrettable, deserved to be suspended for the rest of the season, and got it reduced to 8 games, but at the same time, you can't really judge it too much. But
no,
I did find it quite funny that LeGarrette Blount called Terrell Suggs a dirty player with the fact that still hangs over his head, that punch to Byron Hout on Boise State.
And now, I did, of course, when I watch a game like that, I keep up with social media. I go on Facebook and Twitter, and I see some people like, I do have a couple friends that are Steelers fans, and they'll go and say, see, I knew Terrell Suggs was a dirty player. And then you'll have some Ravens fans go, I've seen worse. But despite the fact whether it was a dirty play or not, when I watched that replay, I just think to myself, at that time, at that exact moment, when it looked like Blount's momentum was getting stopped, was that really necessary?
According to Suggs, yes. He says that he was actually pushing the pile forward.
Why would you push the pile forward if the running back is going forward?
I wouldn't say that it was happening or everything like that. When I saw that play, I was thinking to myself, yeah, that was not good. And you see on Twitter, you see the reactions on Twitter. You see even professional sports pundits in Baltimore who have that Baltimore purple and black glasses on right now. Mm. Even they were saying, come on, Suggs, that's Bush League. That's not what had happened here. And I mean, you look at the way he did that, but the way that play was, it was within the rules because it happened, before the whistle. The whistle was not blown, so he could come in and hit the guy if he wanted to. But to go after the guy's knees, I mean, yeah, that is one thing that kind of puts a target on your back, Josh.
Yeah, it puts a huge target on your back, and it not only puts a target on your back, it puts a target on the rest of the 10 men on your defense, and that is exactly what the Pittsburgh offense did. I mean, you really don't even have to look at the numbers. The only number you have to look at is 6 and 43. 6 touchdowns, 43 points. Ben Roethlisberger, for a second week in a row, threw 6 passing touchdowns and became the first quarterback in NFL history to throw 12 touchdowns in two weeks combined.
And you just picked him up on your fantasy team this week.
Yep, and he's the number 3 ranked quarterback on fantasy if anybody wants him.
Yeah, he overtook Philip Rivers this week. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why, Indy.
Yeah, Philip Rivers and the Chargers, how bad were they this week? Good grief.
Ravens faced them this season, I believe.
They will be facing them later on, I believe. So in one of the later weeks. I think week 13, week 14?
Might be right around there, yeah.
All right, but yeah, I want to talk about the officiating this game just a little bit, though, because yeah, I hate it ad nauseum when Raven fans blame the referees for losses or whatever it is. But Bill Vinovich, it was the head referee for this game, and after that Suggs play happened and you saw the skirmish that happened after that and resulting skirmishes later on, he warned, but he was a major league umpire there for a second. He warned both sides, both head coaches, and then he warned both team captains and said the next personal conduct penalty that I have to issue is going to result in an ejection. So for unsportsmanlike conduct penalties later, nothing. So all he was doing was just finger wagging. He was like, "Don't you do that? Don't you do that? I'm warning you. Don't do it. Don't do it. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna eject somebody. Paper Tiger Bill Vinovich. That's what you were. And the latter parts of that game were unwatchable because that game was just out of hand. It seemed like every single play a skirmish was happening. It extended the time of the game. That game was three hours.
It dragged.
That game was 3 hours and 40 minutes. And I can't stand any type of a sporting event that goes over 3 hours. And
Red Sox, Yankees, and Major League Baseball.
Or Daisuke Matsuzaka, the human rain delay.
Yep.
So I saw what Bill Vinovich did, and Bill Vinovich to me in this game looked like a replacement official, because when the replacement officials, and how embarrassing is the fact that a $9 billion league in the NFL, they can't even pay their referees what they were asking for. How embarrassing is that? And have replacement officials, skag referees, go after run the games. And it seemed like they had no control over the games at all during that year. And Bill Vinovich reminded me of a replacement official with the way he handled that game, Ravens and Steelers, on primetime for the world to see.
Yeah, and as much as me and Ray praised the Ravens for their solid play on the field or even criticized their horrible play on the field, if you based that game, the loss that the Ravens had, off of bad officiating, I'm sorry, but do not listen to the Baltimore Sports Free For All anymore, because me and Ray will kick you down like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Bloodsport.
Yeah,
because that is such a bull, you know, cop out. It's a cop out,
and it's, was that a movie as well with Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah, Bloodsport.
No, I'm talking about Cop Out.
Oh, Time Cop. You're thinking Time Cop, I think.
Time Cop.
Yeah.
Why does that sound like the cheesiest movie ever?
Because it was a cheesy movie.
It sounds like he goes through time and just kicks people into oblivion.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he does in every movie.
All right.
He does a good job doing it. But looking at this game, though, yeah, your defense allowed 43 points. By the way, the most points ever allowed to the Steelers by the Ravens in the history of the rivalry.
Yeah.
So since the Ravens have been incepted in the NFL since 1996,
they are approaching the 20-year anniversary. We're at 2014. We're at 18 years.
Yeah, and that is the one game where they allowed the most points to the Steelers in a single game, and that's what stood out to me in this entire thing right here.
That was before Two River Stadium, when they were in Two River Stadium, and they didn't even allow that many points then. They didn't allow that many points in the Vinny Testaverde era or the Ted Marchabrota era.
Yep, not that many points were allowed at Memorial Stadium, and not that many points were allowed when M&T Bank Stadium was called PSI Net, or even in 2002, Raven Stadium at that time.
I still like Raven Stadium at Camden Yards.
That sounds really professional. Yeah, I like that too.
That's my favorite name for the Baltimore Ravens Stadium. And stadium names aside, and we have it, everything like that, 43-23 was the blowout. You did not lose this game because of the officials. When you get
Chris Collinsworth.
When you get blown out by 20 points, you have nobody to blame but yourself. Joe Flacco sacked 4 times, hit 10 times. James Harrison looks like he's 26. Offensive line needs work. The cornerbacks need work, and they have been addressed this past week. Shockey Brown and Dominique Franks, bye.
Yep, they're joining Frank Walker in the CFL as we speak.
Yeah, and now you have it to where they signed Danny Gore.
Yeah, Danny Gore, who had some history with the Ravens. They were really impressed with what he did with the Lions. And I think there was another corner they picked up too, if I'm not mistaken. I do know they got rid of Supernaw, one of their tight ends, because they have Kyle Juszczyk, who's been playing a little bit of tight end. You still have Owen Daniels. And, oh, yeah, you do have Crockett Gilmore, who, by the way, Ray, caught his first career NFL touchdown pass in garbage time.
Crockett Gilmore caught it in garbage time. Jacoby Jones had a 108-yard kick return.
I still don't believe that happened.
In garbage time. And, yeah, you're talking about Tremaine Jacobs, who's what you were thinking of. He was promoted as a rookie cornerback from the practice squad to the active roster. So you have it to where Jacobs and Gore are going to be competing for that number 2 nickel spot as well. And you have it to where Ladarius Webb also looked very weak in that game. He was
especially against Antonio Brown, who, by the way, I think is, you know, establishing himself as the best wide receiver in the NFL, at least for the season.
Yeah, and it was Martavis Bryant, a rookie as well, who was the guy that was burning Ladarius Webb. They couldn't even find him. Martavis Bryant had 2 of Ben Roethlisberger's 6 touchdowns on offense, and he put up a clinic. The Ravens also had 3 penalties on one play after Lorenzo Taliaferro had that fumble, and they had it on defense. 3 penalties on one play. And it seemed like, man, are they just going to allow a touchdown by default, I guess?
It was just one of those things where you saw that happen, the 3 penalties on one play, and you just said to yourself, wow, now I've seen everything. 3 penalties on one play right there.
Yeah, I was waiting for in this game. You know how in hockey games they have like the big brawls that happen between each team and the referees separate them and they get to the face-off. And as soon as the face-off happens, everybody just drops their gloves and their stick and just starts fighting one-on-one. Everybody has an opponent. The goalies have an opponent. But the penalties, though, in this game were really costly. 10 penalties for 108 yards. To put that in perspective, when the Ravens beat the Steelers 26-6 in Week 2, they had 4 penalties for 35 yards. And granted, this was the game after the whole Ray Rice debacle, after the whole Ray Rice thing came out, the video came out, and everything, they had to deal with the media distraction that happened. They kept their composure, 4 penalties for 35 yards. As far as I know, Josh, they didn't really have any distractions this week in the media. I mean, you have Ray Rice going to be reinstated, but he has his hearing later on this week, and by the time you listen to this podcast, he could have a decision on if he's going back into the league. I guarantee he's not playing for the Ravens, though.
No, I totally agree with you on that statement. And also, leading up to this game, you did have the news about how Ben Roethlisberger threw for over 500 yards and 6 touchdowns against a tough Colts defense. And you even had Pittsburgh sports pundits say, while that was an incredible performance by Ben Roethlisberger, we do not see that happening against the Baltimore Ravens. They'll probably play him a little bit tougher. And, you know, I hate to give the devil his due, but Big Ben right now is putting up the numbers, and he's on a hot streak.
Yeah, it stinks for you to say that, doesn't it?
It does.
You and your purple headphones.
Yeah, it does.
You not only have purple and black goggles on, you have purple and black headphones on.
No, but I do criticize the team when it needs to be criticized, and the Ravens have a lot of criticism to be dished out. While, you know, like I was saying earlier, even though people like to bash on Joe Flacco, you really can't say he was one of the main reasons you lost in this game. If anything, he was like the martyr in this game. You mentioned the numbers. He got sacked, what, 4 times?
And hit 10 times.
Yeah, even if your quarterback does throw an interception, you still got to feel bad for the guy because it didn't look like he had any time at all in the pocket.
It came down to Joe Flacco wasn't looking at his potential receivers down the field. He was looking strictly at his offensive line and looking at the opposing defenders coming in. He had absolutely no time to react and everything else that he had to deal with. You get to even the best quarterbacks, and they will shrivel up in your hands. Robert Griffin III for the Redskins also got sacked a bunch of times. A lot of those sacks were also on him, and it seemed like it was a bad week for quarterbacks all around, unless your names are Brady and Roethlisberger. All right, so Titans.
Well, Peyton Manning had a very good game, even in a loss. He had 438 passing yards.
Yeah, but if the Broncos don't win against the Patriots, it becomes, you know, Peyton Manning's fault by default.
Well, he could blame the scoreboard guy once again.
Yeah, he could have he could have 700 passing yards in a game, and if they lose, it's still his fault against the Patriots, because everybody thinks that the Patriots have Peyton Manning's number. And if you look at the earlier parts of his career, yeah, they did. And you look at everything else in the playoffs, yeah, the Patriots have Peyton Manning's number. But at the same time, this isn't the playoffs. This is the regular season. This is just another game in the season. So Titans coming up this week.
Yep, week 10. And 2-6 in the whenever I think of Titans, Tennessee Titans, I think AFC Central, because that was the old division the Ravens and the Titans played in.
Back when the Ravens and Titans had a decent rivalry. Yep. You had Ray Lewis going up against Eddie George.
Frank Wycheck, former Maryland alum.
Now doing Titans commentary for the Titans Radio Network.
Steve McNair, former MVP, may he rest in peace.
Yes, may he rest in peace.
A co-MVP, I should say.
Yeah, Steve McNair on the Titans with Eddie George, with Frank Wycheck, with Kevin Dyson. Javon Kerse on defense.
Man, he was a beast back in the day.
Samari Roll. Also was on the Titans for a little bit there.
Wow.
And you had it to where this Tennessee Titans team in 2014.
That was back when the Titans were respectable.
The Tennessee Titans in 2014 are a shadow of that team right there. They came off of a Super Bowl, 1 yard away from winning the Super Bowl with Kevin Dyson.
Well, Ray, I gotta stop you on there, because that is an insult to shadows when you say that. They're that bad.
The Tennessee Titans are 2-6, and it's not even
third
close
in the AFC South.
It's not even close to them having even a prayer at making the playoffs. You know why, Josh?
Because no team that started 2-6 ever made the postseason.
Well, not only that, but because they started out the season with Jake Locker. Mm-hmm. Oh my. Charlie Whitehurst, oh my. And now they will be starting a rookie quarterback in Zach Mettenberger.
I think that's what every Titans fan is saying when they heard that that's the quarterback right there, Mettenberger. Oh, no. But there are two players that, you know, I believe are the key opponents, the key matchups for the Ravens when they face the Titans in Week 10. You have Delanie Walker, who seems to be having a solid year at tight end.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Mettenberger had his first career touchdown with Delanie Walker in the third quarter against the Texans.
Yep, 35 receptions for Delanie Walker, 475 yards and 4 touchdowns. You also have the running back, Bishop Sankey, who has 302 yards and 1 touchdown. Young running back, has a lot of upside, but with a team that is struggling on offense and doesn't seem to distribute the ball well in terms of the passing game and the running game, coming back to M&T Bank Stadium after you got kicked in the proverbial groin, I would not want to be the Titans right now, because I think the Ravens will be seeing red this week.
Yeah, speaking of getting kicked in the groin, they've lost against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, who are fourth in the AFC. See, once again, AFC South.
The Washington Redskins.
Yeah, I could see that.
October 19th, that's when they brought in Colt McCoy, and he was lights out against the Titans. And
Redskins probably should have started McCoy against the Vikings.
Yeah, well, I don't think that would have made a difference. That defense was terrible for the Redskins.
Teddy Bridgewater.
If you allow Teddy Bridgewater to do that against your team, yeah, you had a bad day on defense.
Yeah. And who else did they lose to?
Yeah, well, they lost against the Houston Texans.
Well, who did they beat?
Ago.
Well, hold on. Who did they beat, though? Their two wins. Who did they beat?
Let's see. Their second win, they came, okay, they actually did beat the Jaguars. Okay, I misspoke there.
Okay, so.
But they followed it with the loss to the Redskins. They did beat the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay, and who was their, they had two wins, though. Who was their second win?
Against their second win, if I'm looking it up here right now on my invisible typewriter, as I type here. Yes, so you can hear me type.
You're a ghostwriter.
This is fantastic radio here.
We are ghostwriting as we speak.
Yeah, they won their season opener against the Chiefs.
Wow,
26-10.
And I bet many people back then were saying, "Look out for Jake Locker. This is the year for him."
No, Jake Locker, no.
No.
No, no. He just went against the Chiefs. And believe it or not, they won against the Chiefs 26-10. They lost against the Cowboys 26-10. Same score.
Yep, same score. kind of like how the Steelers allowed 20 more points to the Ravens' offense, and just like how the Ravens' defense allowed 20 more points to the Steelers' defense, or Steelers' offense, I should say.
Yeah, too many numbers here, but they did lose against the Browns in the AFC North, 29-28. The Redskins, like I said, 19-17. They've lost some close games, but they've also been blown out a few times by the Bengals, 33-7, Colts, 41-17. Let's see here. Texans, 30-16. I wouldn't consider that too much of a blowout, but it was still, yeah. But the Cowboys, 26-10. The teams that were supposed to blow out the Tennessee Titans have blown out the Tennessee Titans, and the teams that maybe should or should not have played them close. And then it also includes the Washington Redskins. The Jaguars, they beat them 16-14. When you beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 16-14 and then lose to the Redskins the following week 19-17, you are not a good team.
Nope, you're not a good team at all. So looking at the prediction for this matchup, Ravens-Titans Week 10 at M&T Bank Stadium, is this going to be a close matchup for the Ravens or the Titans, or is this going to be a possible blowout in the favor for the Ravens?
All right, I'm going to go with blowout just simply because the teams that have, like I said earlier, the teams that are supposed to blow out the Titans tend to blow out the Titans. And I will say this. If the Ravens lose to the Tennessee Titans,
you can
consider the season over at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even at 5-4, they'd still be at 5-5 losing to the Titans. Then they go into a bye. Yeah, you consider the season over at that point because losing to the Titans would be an embarrassment.
Yeah, we were talking about the proverbial groin kick that the Ravens took in Week 9 against the Steelers on Sunday Night Football. A loss to the Titans on a regular Sunday day at M&T Bank Stadium in your house, a loss to the Titans, a 2-6 Titans team, I don't know if that is a proverbial groin kick. That's probably a proverbial Mike Tyson knockout punch.
Mike Tyson's Mysteries premiered on Adult Swim a couple weeks ago. Have you watched it?
I have not watched it yet. I got to remember to watch that. Yeah,
surprisingly, I've read that it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I heard it got good reviews. So yeah, I'll definitely look into that.
Also, Mike Tyson played Mike Tyson's Punch Out again and actually fought himself.
On, I think it was Jimmy Fallon, he did that.
Yeah, because prior to last year, he'd never played Mike Tyson's Punch Out on the NES.
I could see that. I mean, you know, I don't know.
Well, they also had to pull his likeness out of the game later on in later versions because of copyright issues and lawsuits and everything like that. They put in a guy named Mr. Dream as his replacement. But everybody remembers fighting Mike Tyson. Nobody talks about Mr. Dream. Everybody talks about Mike Tyson. Nobody calls it Punch-Out. They call it Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Is this going to be either a close win or a blowout for the Ravens? Or are the Titans going to pull the Mike Tyson knockout punch?
43-10 Ravens.
Really? So you think the Ravens are going to send a message before they go into their Week 11 bye?
Yeah, and I don't expect the secondary to be revitalized, but I just think that the Ravens are going to come out the gate swinging early. That's going to just demoralize the Titans. Rookie quarterback, yeah, Zach Mettenberger, he was, I guess, decent against the Texans for the most part, but at the same time, the Titans' defense, not really all that good. And let's see here. Mettenberger's stats against the Texans, 27-41.
Mettenberger's a former LSU Tiger, right?
Yeah, 299 yards with two touchdowns and one interception. He was actually decent against the Texans. They did not lose that game because of Zach Mettenberger. They lost that game just because of how bad their defense is, how bad their team is all around. And, yeah, they got some bright spots with Delanie Walker, and Mettenberger did perform admirably. But let's see what he does against the Ravens' defense of Elvis Dumervil, Terrell Suggs, and Haloti Ngata. Let's see what he does against that front seven of the Ravens, because obviously the secondary is their Achilles heel. I wonder how the acquisitions midseason for cornerbacks will stack up for them, because this team is clearly weak without Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith was the
glue. That is an understatement right
there.
Was
the glue that held that secondary together. And without him, that secondary just looks completely soft. And even Ladarius Webb, their better corner, ever since he signed that deal, it just seems like he's gone downhill. I mean, he's battled injuries since he signed that deal. But now you look at him this season as a healthy Ladarius Webb, where you see in games, he just looks like he's being outclassed man-to-man, one-on-one. He just can't cover like he did before he signed that deal.
I'm going to be less generous than you and say it's going to be 30-14 Ravens. I do see Joe Flacco throwing at least three touchdown passes, probably will put up the yards. And I do think it'll be a nice day for Justin Tucker in terms of field position, field goal range, and he may kick one or two over 50 yards.
Let's put it this way. The Ravens shut down Le'Veon Bell against the Steelers. They have a really, really good rush defense, even though that wasn't enough to beat Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben Roethlisberger is a seasoned veteran of the league. But now you look at Zach Mettenberger, rookie quarterback. If the Titans cannot get a run game going, and all signs point to, yes, the Titans will not get a run game going, the Ravens have the sixth best rushing defense in the league. And if they can't get a run game going, and they got to put the hands in, and they got to put the game in the hands of Zach Mettenberger, a rookie, I don't know if it's going to go too well, especially with Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dumervil coming from the outside, Haloti Ngata coming from the inside.
And hopefully, you know, as opposed to week 9 when it seemed like tempers flared, hopefully cooler heads will prevail in this matchup, hopefully in the Ravens' favor. Now, the American League Gold Glove winners have been announced, Ray. So, tell me, who won?
Well, let's see. Three Royals won.
Well, that was expected. They were the darlings of the postseason, I guess.
Were the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, but by the way, though, before we carry on, congratulations, San Francisco Giants fans. Three World Series titles in 5 years.
Oh, okay, let me mark the time here. We are 40 minutes into this show.
Right.
And this is the first time we've ever mentioned the World Series.
Right.
We didn't mention it at all last week.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, so we're mentioning the World Series right now. Can you imagine how tuned out that the Baltimore market was in general? Believe it or not, the numbers were up from last year. Of course, last year's World Series was a sweep. This went all the way to Game 7, and when Game 7 happens, people pay attention to that seventh game because it's win or go home, do or die. The series all of a sudden becomes started over, and it's going to be best of one. Game 7 is always fun to watch, and you saw it right there. How about a performance by Madison Bumgarner? The guy was absolutely insane, filthy. And the Kansas City Royals, who became the darlings of the playoffs, I was kind of rooting for them until they decided they wanted to act like douchebags.
Well, yeah, that too, but yeah, congrats to the San Francisco Giants winning three World Series in 5 years. Would that constitute as a dynasty right there?
I would say yes. I would say yes. If the Spurs have a dynasty right now, I would also say that the San Francisco Giants have a dynasty that nobody's talking about. The San Francisco Giants are the San Antonio Spurs of Major League Baseball. They win all the time, but nobody really talks about them.
Yeah, I mean, you have Buster Posey, who's kind of like the Tim Duncan, except much younger. And, you know, probably more productive in terms of his offensive numbers.
Maybe you could say Pablo Sandoval would be more of the Tim Duncan of the San Francisco Giants.
You know what? That is sad, though, you have to bring up that name, because he may not be in National League Orange and Black next year. He may sign himself a big deal. And you know what? Good for him.
How about American League Orange and Black?
Pablo Sandoval in an Orioles uniform. I had to ponder that. But enough about that. All right, we're past the World Series now. It's the offseason.
Awards are being dealt out, and we're going to see signings in later on here. So,
but let's get to the awards.
I mentioned that the Royals won three gold gloves.
Right.
But you know who else won three gold gloves?
The Baltimore Orioles.
The Baltimore Orioles here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. We are mentioning the three gold glove winners right now. At shortstop, J.J. Hardy.
That was expected.
Guy's been one of the more consistent shortstops in the league for like the last 5 years.
Even though he seemed off a little bit this year, the fact that he turned some double plays definitely helped his fielding percentage and, you know, made himself more noticeable in defense.
Okay, yeah, but you talk about J.J. Hardy being off. That was with his numbers, actually. That was with his offensive numbers, his power. His power was way down this year. His home runs went way down because, I mean, what, he went the entire month of April without hitting a home run?
Right, yeah. And I believe a center fielder for the Orioles, a number 10, what's his name? You know, the guy that some people complain about, and yes, even I complained about for his golf ball swing. Adam Jones, he won his, what, fourth? Fourth Gold Glove?
His fourth Gold Glove award in center field. And, yeah, man. Adam Jones has become the standard at center field. I love the fact that the Orioles and the Royals tied for Gold Gloves because they were two very similar teams.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that the Orioles live by the long ball and the Royals live by small ball.
And lucky broken bat singles in the outfield. Yeah, well, Adam Jones, though, let's talk about him real quick. I think it is safe to say now, Ray, that he should be considered one of the best Orioles of all time right now, as we speak.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, I mean, in the short time that he's been here, and yes, I know 2008 to 2014 doesn't seem like a short time, but that's about, what, 7 seasons he's been in orange and black right there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that constitutes as a good portion of your Major League Baseball career. And given the fact he's been to several All-Star games, it is safe to say that, you know, when you mention Baltimore Orioles baseball history, you have to bring up Adam Jones.
Yeah, because Adam Jones now has 4 gold gloves, but that's still only 1/4 of Brooksy.
Yeah, it's 1/4. Yeah, Adam would have to play till he's, what, 48 years old to catch up?
I'm looking at the National League side of the gold glove equation, and Yadier Molina, he won 7. He won his 7th gold glove this year, and even he's like not even halfway to Brooks, and Yadier Molina, his career is getting up there a little bit. That was probably one of the reasons why the Cardinals lost to the Giants in the NLCS, was because they lost Yadier Molina for the rest of that series. Once they lost Yadier Molina, that was it for the Cardinals. That game over, man. Game over.
And the final Orioles Gold Glove winner was?
For his 2nd Gold Glove of his career, Nick Markakis, a man who is known to throw out runners at home, outfield assist extraordinaire, Mr. Nick Markakis, the man who was humbled to see a team that he stuck with through and through, through bad times, mainly just bad times, just good times for the last 3 years, but the guy who stuck through all of these losing seasons for the Baltimore Orioles, the guy who was humble when it was announced, Ryan Wagner announced it on the Baltimore at Camden Yards' PA system, announced it, that the Baltimore Orioles were 2014 AL East champs. You see Nick Markakis just look up and say, how about that? He wins the 2nd gold glove of his career. Well-deserving, Mr. Markakis, although I don't know if this is going to help towards him getting signed by the Baltimore Orioles, because his price just went up.
Yeah.
He put something shiny on his resume again.
Yep, he puts something shiny on his resume, and he's proving, I guess you could say, with the 2nd Gold Glove Award, that maybe baseball writers will take notice that this guy has been a great defensive outfielder all along, and maybe he'll collect a few more before it's all said and done.
He may collect a few more when it's all said and done, and he's still, you know, fairly young for how long he's been in the league.
He'll be 32 next year.
He'll be 32 next year, which is still kind of young in baseball. I mean, you're still
in your prime.
You're still in your prime, so he may win one or two before his career is out, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the future holds for Nick Markakis, and hopefully it's in the American League orange and black.
Yeah, much like Pablo Sandoval, right? Or is that wishful thinking?
That's wishful thinking.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to the week that was college football, week 10 of college football. And before we get to the Maryland Terrapins, we got to bring up the top teams in college football and how they did over the weekend. Mississippi State, number 1 Mississippi State, escapes Arkansas 17-10. And as much as I want to root for Mississippi State, I just keep thinking, Ray, and one of these weeks now, before the playoffs arrive, Mississippi State, they're just going to lose that one game one last time and just find themselves out of the top 4 spot. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because you see number ones go down all the time, and can they hold their momentum? This is kind of why I don't really pay attention to the rankings midseason, considering that, they don't play the bowl games until January and late December, so I don't really pay attention to it now, and you see everyone's making a big hype about it. Oh, yeah, the first playoff committee rankings are released. Okay, and maybe when it becomes more closer to championship week for conferences, maybe I'll pay attention to it then. But at the same time, all this is just hype and meandering and everything like that. How about the SEC, though, having so many teams ranked in the top 5?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to the SEC here with Auburn at number 3, winning 35-31 over then number 4 Ole Miss. And with that loss, Ray, I think it's safe to say that Ole Miss is out of the playoff picture. Maybe not out of the bowl picture, but definitely out of the national championship playoff picture, which I think is a huge shame for Eli Manning, because with the bad season that the Giants have had, that just seems like that's all he was clinging on to, being an Ole Miss alum. And Texas Christian University wins 31-30 over West Virginia. And this is what shocked me about this game. The Mountaineers were ahead of Texas, or ahead of TCU. And TCU came back late in the fourth quarter and won 31-30. And such a shame, though, because West Virginia, that offense in the past several weeks, especially with receiver Kevin White, was on fire. And you were thinking every week they were just climbing the rankings, looking to itch to be that team that just cracks the top 10 by, say, week 11, week 12 of the college football season. Well, I think it's safe to say that we can't consider the Mountaineers a national championship contender, given the fact that TCU has definitely improved on that. So the top six as we speak, number six TCU, number five Alabama, number four Oregon. The Oregon Ducks are in the top four now.
LeGarrette Blount, be happy.
LeGarrette Blount, be happy. Keep the fist down. Number three, Auburn. Number two, Florida State. And then, of course, number one, Mississippi State. So who knows what will happen in week 11 with college football. Hopefully a couple of the top two teams are knocked out. Hopefully it's Florida State, but with the rest of their schedule, I don't see that happening.
What, you have a angst against Florida State here?
You have a angst against Florida State. Well, enough about that, though. Let's go to the Maryland game.
Maybe because I live in a state that's known for crabs.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. Yeah. Maryland went to Happy Valley this weekend to take on the Nittany Lions, which was their first matchup in what seemed like forever. Maryland won 20-19 over the Nittany Lions, improving to 6-3 on the season.
They're going bowling.
They're going bowling. 3-2.
As I predicted a couple weeks ago, they're going bowling.
3-2 in the Big Ten. And we got to bring this guy's name up because of all the Terps that have played, whether it was on offense or defense, this guy seems to be the constant, you know, upgrade in terms of player value. Kicker Brad Craddock, 14 for 14 this season, Ray. 57 yards is his longest field goal this season. And being a junior kicker and seeming that most kickers stay till their senior year, say he has another perfect or near perfect season, this may be a guy that Maryland can hang their hat on and say, this guy is going to be a former Maryland alum turned NFL player, kind of like Nick Novak.
With a kicker or I mean, Dan Bailey, how good has he been for the NFL this year? For the Cowboys?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, I mean, for the longest time, he was sitting on a lot of people's bench for the fantasy for fantasy teams. But at the same time, though, if you acquired Dan Bailey midseason, you got yourself a steal there. Brad Craddock, that's a name that I hear constantly. He used to be a producer for the Maryland Terrapins Radio Network. And you always heard Johnny Holiday, call Craddock's name. And he guy would always come through in a pinch. And he is definitely one of my favorite Terps on that team right now. Another one of my favorite Terps. Unfortunately, he now has fame for the wrong reasons in this Penn State game. That's one Stephon Diggs, five-star recruit Stephon Diggs, where everybody was fist-pumping for Randy Etzel because he got himself a five-star recruit. And Stephon Diggs has been their best player consistently for the last couple of years. They have to go without him against Michigan State. Why? Because during the pregame with Penn State, they decide to get into an altercation. Stephon Diggs lays his hands on a referee, which is a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
Unless your name is Kerry Williams, because Kerry Williams launched a referee in the Super Bowl and didn't get ejected or fined or suspended. I mean, but yeah, Stephon Diggs, he lays his hands on an NCAA official, a Big Ten official. And then during the coin toss, the Terps captains and the Penn State captains, they all came, and Stephon Diggs was included in this. They go to shake hands, and the Terps have their hands down. They say, no, we're not shaking your hand. No. To me,
how did you feel about that, by the way, when you saw that?
I mean, you see that, and you're thinking to yourself, classless.
Now, before that, you did bring up the fact that Penn State Nittany Lions ran through the Terps warm-ups before the coin toss, right?
Yeah, and with that, it seemed to rub them the wrong way. They got a little bit of skirmish, but then to have their hands down, that's when the cameras are rolling on you, and you're being looked at by the Big Ten. You're the new kid in town. And yeah, you want to make a statement in your first year in the Big Ten. You're not getting killed like everybody thought you would be. As a matter of fact, a lot of people thought that the Terrapins would lose this game against Penn State, and they did not. They won 20-19 in exciting fashion. So you saw what Maryland was doing in this game for pregame. It just reeked of, you know, they did this on purpose because going to the Big Ten, you need somewhat of a rival here. Who was Maryland football's rival in ACC?
Wake Forest.
You could say Wake Forest, Georgia Tech.
I don't even think Georgia Tech would consider them a rival.
You wouldn't really have a rival for Maryland. You definitely don't say Florida State, but you wouldn't have a rival in Maryland for the ACC. So you come to the Big Ten, you need a rivalry game that's going to get the fans amped up for this game and get everybody, all the players amped up. So who do you choose? You choose the team that is the closest to you regionally, and that is Penn State in the Big Ten. So Penn State steals recruits from Maryland all the time, and they decided they wanted to make a stand against Penn State in the head-to-head matchup with Maryland and Penn State. It's not even close. It was like 35-3. In terms of victories, Penn State clearly owns Maryland in the history of the quote-unquote rivalry. So I guess maybe the higher-ups at Maryland, this is a theory, is that the higher-ups in Maryland just told Stephon Diggs, look, and the captains, we need to establish a rivalry here. So can you do something that would tick off the Penn State players by not shaking their hands? And, yeah, so the Big Ten came out. They reprimanded Stephon Diggs. They even suspended him for Michigan State. That is a huge loss against Michigan State because, you know, Michigan State has one of the top-ranked defenses in NCAA football, and you have it to where you lose him for a game. And Maryland itself was fined $10,000. Kind of ironic considering that they moved to the Big Ten because they wanted to get more money and they have to fork over a little bit more for the fine because, they showed poor sportsmanship and violate the Big Ten's personal conduct policy in terms of sportsmanship.
Yeah, and it is a huge loss for Diggs not being in the Michigan State game, which will be at Byrd Stadium at the University of Maryland.
Is it just Byrd Stadium now, or does it have like a sponsorship to it?
No, it's Byrd Stadium. It's not like the Gary Williams Court at Comcast Center or anything like that. But yeah, Michigan State, you and I both agreed that game is a potential loss. Unless something magical happens in the Terps' favor where the Michigan State defense is all of a sudden, you know, broken or unlocked.
By the way, it's called Capital One Field at Byrd Stadium now.
Oh, really? Capital One? Okay. So there is sponsorship.
They actually do have a sponsorship, and I wouldn't see any reason why they would lose that sponsorship. They've had that since they were in the ACC. So you move to the Big Ten, Capital One would stay with that.
Yeah. So looking at the next 3 weeks, you and I both agree Michigan State's a loss. Yeah. Then you have Michigan. And then you have Rutgers.
And I would say Michigan is a win just because that team...
Oh, that team is in shambles. Brady Hoke's near... His foot is like halfway through the door right now.
Yeah, they even got rid of
their AD.
They got rid of their athletic director mid-season. That shows you... The way they handled their first-string quarterback going down and putting him back in the game when he was clearly injured. Yeah, that was... could be one of the reasons why he got axed, but there were many other reasons why that athletic director got axed for Michigan. Michigan is, I would say the Titans, the 2014 Titans are a shadow of their former selves. Michigan is not even a shadow. They're more like a cockroach of their former selves.
Didn't this team win the Orange Bowl like a couple seasons ago under Brady Hoke, and now this happens? I guess that Michigan State, that Michigan guy theory isn't working out too well for the Wolverines.
Yeah, they were better off with Rich Rodriguez,
who is actually having a good season with Arizona right now.
Hey, who knows? Maybe they were better off with Lloyd Carr.
Let's not go too far. Hey, that rhymed.
Yeah, if you can't beat Ohio State, that's pretty much detrimental to your legacy as a Michigan coach because Lloyd Carr could not beat Jim Tressel, and that's why he got axed at Michigan.
Yeah, that is very true.
But it seems like they were better off under Lloyd Carr.
So we could see possibly the Terps finishing maybe 8-4 at best, maybe 7-5 at the worst. Either way, still going bowling.
Yeah, and I consider that a huge success in their inaugural season in the Big Ten where everybody had them written off like, yeah, they're going to get their asses kicked. They're going to get killed. They're going to get destroyed in the Big Ten. The Big Ten has no. They seem to be doing better in the Big Ten than what they were in the ACC, A, and B, especially if they go 8-4. And B, they're making more money. I think they made the right decision, Josh.
I think they made the right decision.
At least on the football side. We haven't seen the basketball side yet.
And who knows? Maybe if the success continues with the football team, they may recruit even better talent within their state and maybe take away a few recruits from Penn State. Kind of a little bit of payback.
Kind of a little bit of the opposite payback, and you could see recruiting be a little bit more of a higher quality at Maryland.
Yep. And guess what time it is, Ray?
Tool time?
Nope, not Tool. Not Jeff Tool, the former quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, or Tool Time Taylor, who Tim Allen played on Home Improvement. No. The 2 minute rants. 2 minute rants.
That it is. You go first.
Okay. I'm going to be talking some NBA this week. And in the short time that the NBA has taken off for the 2014-2015 season, we've seen many storylines take place all across the sports news ticker. We've seen Kevin Durant go down to injury. We've seen Russell Westbrook of the Thunder, Thunder teammate of Durant's, go down to injury. We've seen LeBron James kind of start off slow for the Cavaliers, but the Cavs seem to be picking it up. See the Wizards kind of improving their play on the court. But the one guy that seems to be taking all the headlines once again is one Kobe Bryant. Yup, number 24 for the Los Angeles Lakers, five-time NBA world champion, former MVP. A guy who, no question, no shadow of a doubt, is going to be a legit first ballot Hall of Famer at the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Now, with all that being said, I have to criticize the coverage of the Los Angeles Lakers, mainly because, A, they are 0-4. B, Kobe Bryant is 36 years old. 36 years old and is a shadow of his former self. C, Bryant is leading the team in points per game, shocker, but it's only 24.8. That's not impressive. And what's even less impressive is all the news coming out about Kobe Bryant, how he may go to another team, like, say, the New York Knicks, where his former teammate Derek Fisher is the head coach, and where his former head coach with the Lakers, Phil Jackson. And you hear all these things going on. It just makes you wonder, when is this storyline, when is this soap opera with number 24 Kobe Bryant going to end? Kobe, either stay with the Lakers or just go.
Just go into the sunset and restore your legacy. Don't be a Steve Nash who hurts himself by carrying luggage and is out for the season. Okay, my two-minute rant is going to be about this latest story about how the media likes to play up controversy in the locker room and how it's connected to bad football teams, okay? The Seattle Seahawks, one would have thought that they wouldn't be the ones to have a Super Bowl hangover. Well, not only do they have a Super Bowl hangover, they have locker room dissent, according to many reports. And when these things creep out, it's because you're a bad football team, A. But B, it's because there may be some truth to that. However, you know, you hear the reports that say Russell Wilson is not quote-unquote black enough. And there's the side that says he is, or the side that says he isn't, and you see the dissension there. Another story came out this week that was kind of almost similar, to where there are players on the Washington Redskins that are not too fond of Robert Griffin III. Robert Griffin, who had all that hype coming out of Baylor, who had more sponsors than anybody in his rookie year, who had that tremendous rookie year, only to get hurt in the Seattle game and lose some significant playing time and rehab time, and it seemed like he was on a slippery slope towards the decline. Now he's back, and he performed pretty decent against the Vikings. He didn't light the world on fire, but you wouldn't expect him to light the world on fire considering he hasn't played in weeks. And you saw, immediately after that game, you saw the story about how players, they don't think too kindly of Robert Griffin. Well, there are 52 players in a locker room at any given time. You have many coaches and coaching personnel as well. Not everyone is going to like you. There are going to be certain players that do and certain players that don't. And you hope that the players that do like you are the receivers you're throwing to in your offensive line. Those are the ones that count. Those are the ones that say, hey, Robert Griffin III, you're a good quarterback. Russell Wilson, you're a good quarterback. Keep throwing to me and offensive line will protect you. Those are the ones that count. Anybody on defense?
Yeah, I totally agree with that right there. And it just seems like, you know, we can even go back to the ESPN article with Michael Sam and the whole shower thing, the unnamed source that, you know, mentioned that whole story. And I guess that is the key component to know whether a story is real or completely fabricated by the national sports media. Unnamed player. Usually when you hear the word unnamed player, there is a 80% chance that story is completely fabricated and false.
Yeah, and you see many fabrications, many falsehoods, and we'll probably be talking about next week the falsehoods and the fabrications in the Ray Rice story, or lack thereof, and we're going to be talking about everything else with that, because his hearing's coming up this week and a decision could be reached by Friday. So we'll be talking about that next week. Hopefully we'll be talking about Buck Showalter being manager of the year.
Yep, hopefully. Hopefully the baseball writers will get this one right, as opposed to the managers that voted for the Sporting News manager of the year. Hopefully, we'll talk about a Ravens 6-4 record before the bye week. Hopefully, the offense and defense improves before we get to the bye week.
Come on, 43-10. That's the score I've set. Come let's on. Let's mark the tape right there.
30-14. Yep, and hopefully the Terps find some way to beat Michigan State.
We have a lot of hope, maybe not on that one.
Maybe.
I'm not going with that. I'm not going to hold my breath on that.
Well, we can do a Lloyd Christmas on this. So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm not even interested in seeing the sequel to that movie, by the way.
Me either.
I'm seeing some of the commercials on TV. And I'm like, this is disgusting. Hey, I don't want to watch it.
Wait, is it because he's going after Jeff Daniels' daughter?
Well, that A, and then I just saw the commercial with him with the hot dog out of his mouth. I'm like, come on, guys. Really? No. Yeah. I'm not interested in this movie at all. I like the fact when you were laughing at a guy choking on a hamburger. All right, so next week, until then, this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I'm Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
We will see you all.